For me, running is like meditation. Sometimes I listen to music, but mostly I just listen to what's happening around me. Take it in, let it wash over me. Another breath, another block, another mile. Simranjeet Singh used to run around NYU in New York when he was teaching religion courses there. He's a Sikh, so he wears a turban. It's like a second skin to him, but other people notice. And sometimes, as you're about to hear, the noticing turns ugly.
As I'm running, I hear someone shouting with a few colorful adjectives. They're saying, effing Osama, effing Osama.
To you. This is directed at you.
That's right. Yeah, yelling at me. And I had my headphones in, so I kind of heard it. I heard it enough. I could have ignored it. I usually do in situations like this. Mm-hmm. And as I'm running by, I look at this person who's yelling at me. And it's a kid. I mean, he's probably 18 or 20 years old, the same age as my students. He's with a couple of friends and he's laughing. But I stopped and I went up to him and he put up his hand and sort of waved me off because he wanted to dismiss me. Oh. And I said, no, actually, we're going to have a little conversation about this. I could see he's just trying to get out of the conversation, hoping it would be over. But he was a person of color. And I mentioned to him as I was just reflecting, I said, you know, I'm guessing you know what it's like for people to say these kinds of things and how hurtful it can be. And just that connection, I mean, I saw his eyes change, totally went from distance into sincerity. And that was it, right? He just shook my hand. He said, I'm so sorry. And I was like, I appreciate that. And I went on my run and he went back to his friends. And it's not like I feel like I changed the world in that moment. And I don't even think, you know, I changed the trajectory of this person's life, right? That's not the point. But it totally changed my day. And it's actually really changed the way that I try and handle situations like this when it's appropriate.
I wanted to talk with Simranjeet Singh because I knew he'd written a lot about how to see people as better than their worst moments or their most harmful choices. We all have people in our lives who have hurt us or those we love. How do we see beyond that damage? Simran wrote a book called The Light We Give, How Sikh Wisdom Can Transform Your Life. And in it, he talks about the transformation that happened to him after a tragedy. On August 5th, 2012, a 40-year-old white man named Wade Michael Page opened fire inside a Sikh temple in Oak Creek, Wisconsin. He killed 6 people on the scene. A 7th person died of their wounds in 2020. Now, Simran wasn't there. He didn't know any of the victims personally, but this was a racist attack from an avowed white supremacist who had targeted his faith and his culture. Simran felt helpless as he watched the news unfold when he was at a friend's apartment in New York City. Just a heads up, you're going to hear Simran use the Punjabi pronunciation of his religion and those who practice it. So rather than Sikhism or Sikhs, you're going to hear him say Sikhism and Sikhs.
It was one of those mornings where the details remain etched in your heart and in your mind forever. I got a call from my mom and she said, turn on the TV, turn on the news. And we did. And it was an active shooter situation. These are people that you feel connected to and they're going through such suffering and there's nothing you can really do about it. As we were planning to head home, my wife and I, we asked ourselves, do we feel safe walking? And maybe we shouldn't leave the apartment where we were. And part of the experience of all of this is how fear can start to control our lives. And so we made the conscious decision, and this is one of the core tenets of the Sikh philosophy that we, in that moment, embraced, that we chose to live into. In our scripture, it's called Nirbho, fearlessness. And that was something that we intentionally chose that afternoon. And it's something that the Oak Creek community in Wisconsin really embodied in the days and weeks that followed. I mean, they, to the point where they even had t-shirts made that said Nirbho Nirver, meaning no fear, no hate.
Those are such different ideas too, because you can live without fear. You can say we refuse, you know, to change how we live, how we worship, who we are, despite this hideous thing. But to not give into anger and hate is like another bridge.
And, you know, at first, I let that anger sit. And I was okay with it. I mean, I didn't love that I was angry, but I thought it was fine and it felt appropriate. But as the anger continued to consume me, I started to realize that the person who I was angry at was gone. He had taken his own life at the end of the massacre. So my anger was not going to have any impact on him. And all it was doing to me was eating me up from the inside. I mean, it just felt so corrosive. And that's when I started to realize that, you know, there's a choice I can make here, that anger may feel like a natural reaction, but it's not the only option in situations like these. You know, as someone who has grown up in this country looking different and being a target of hate, you know, I have a turban, I have a beard, I have brown skin, and I'm often on the receiving end of people's bigotry. And part of what I've learned is to not take it so personally, right? To know that other people's anger is their problem. It's not mine. Mm-hmm. But also mm-hmm. to realize that it can be my problem if those people can't control it.
So what changed for you? Because you were somehow able to, well, not forgive him, right? There was no forgiveness, but there was a letting go.
Yeah. I mean, maybe letting go is not even the right word. But forgiving definitely did not feel appropriate. I mean, he didn't apologize. He took his own life. Right. And I know for a lot of people, and in many traditions, forgiveness is important. And I appreciate that. But for me, this really wasn't about forgiveness. I think, you know, what I really struggle with in this country is so often forgiveness is expected from those who are on the margins. And over again in contexts of racial violence, right? Like Dylann Roof in South Carolina, the immediate conversation was, well, if these are real Christians, they'll forgive him. And I don't think that's a fair expectation to put on people.
Dylann Roof, of course, was the white man who killed 9 Black people inside the Mother Emanuel Amy Church in 2015 in Charleston.
That's right. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I don't think it's a fair expectation for us to put on others. And I don't even know if necessarily that's the solution to our suffering. And I personally haven't had the experience that's the way to go. But I've developed a few strategies over the years, drawing from Sikh philosophy on how to deal with those moments. One is to get to know the person. I found that if you can know someone, you can really come to humanize them. And so I tried that with this individual, this killer. And I found that the more I got to know him, the less I felt connected to him. I mean, the strategy just didn't work. I read about his background. I read the white supremacist message boards he was. I mean, I just read everything I could. And I was like, this guy has nothing in common with me. The real sort of revelation moment came when I was talking to young Sikh kids at a camp in New York. And the parents had asked me to lead a session with them about the massacre. And I did not want to. I didn't have kids at the time. And so I wasn't even sure how to talk to, you know, 5-6-year-olds about this kind of violence. The big point of revelation in this conversation came when I asked kids, why did Wade Michael Page kill these people? Their immediate recounting was that this man was evil, that he killed because he was an evil person. And that struck me because evil is not a concept that we give much attention to in Sikh philosophy. We don't even believe in evil. And we certainly don't believe that people are evil. Mm-hmm. But I also realized that this is essentially how I had been thinking about this person, right? All of these terms I'd been using, like racist and white supremacist and so on, they were all code for my own way of thinking about him as evil. That shocking moment really had me step back and reflect on, well, what is it that I believe? I don't actually believe he was an evil person. What do I believe about this person? About how a human being could commit this kind of atrocity against another human being? Like, what could enable that? And that question pushed me, I mean, all within the context of this conversation with the kids, to really go back to basic Sikh teachings. The core idea is, we all have the same light. we're all interconnected, that we all have a shared sense of humanity. And we are able to hurt one another when we fail to see that light. Mm.
This is, am I saying this right? This is Vaheguru?
Vaheguru is the term that we use for divinity.
Yeah.
And there are different ways in which we would describe it. But one of them that I really love, I'll share with you from Sikh scripture. And this is what I shared with these kids as the conversation was developing, is this teaching. Aval Allah Nurupaya Kudrat Ke Sabande. Ek Noor Te Sab Jag Upjaya Kon Pale Ko Mande. It says, first God created the light and all the people of the world. So if everyone comes from the same light, how can we say anyone is good or anyone is bad? It's essentially saying there's no place for judgment. There's no place for discrimination. This is a core teaching in Sikh philosophy. And part of what I realized in this process was as I was thinking about this white supremacist, I was so judgmental of him. I mean, I had developed the same kind of supremacist thinking that I was upset with him for, right? Like I thought I was better than him as a human being. I thought I was more divine or had more light inside of me or however you want to describe it. I just thought I was better than him at the end of the day.
But can't we agree that you didn't murder people? Like, doesn't that make you a better person?
I think we can get in trouble if we start to say, there's no morality. There's nothing wrong and nothing right. But I don't think that our ability to live in certain ways necessarily means we're better than other people. You know, it's so interesting. Growing up, the one thing that I found most frustrating and the biggest turnoff about religion was when people thought they were better than you, right? And maybe it's because I grew up in Texas and there's a lot of that kind of judgment. Mm-hmm. The holier than thou kind of mentality, it just always rubbed me the wrong way. Mm-hmm. And I never really understood why it was particularly unacceptable to me until I really started to think about this relationship that I mean, a very one-sided relationship because this man was dead, but this relationship that I was developing with this man trying to see his humanity and learning mm-hmm. that really, if I wanted to see him as equally divine, then I had to get over this assumption that just because he did horrible things means that he's a monster or he's inhuman and he doesn't deserve the same kind of dignity as everyone else.
It's a hard thing, I think, for a lot of people, myself included, to wrap your head around. It's really bold, you know? That idea and the effort you put towards it to try to discover and to meditate on this person's humanity. And that you had the space to conceive of him as both good and evil, right? I mean, I think for a lot of people who come from a Christian tradition like myself, it is this binary, right? Like you grow up with this idea, there are good people, there are bad people, the good and the evil, and opening yourself up to the idea that we are both things, that all of us contain the good and the bad, the dark and the light is useful.
I hear you when you say it sounds hard because it is hard. It was hard. It's still hard for me. I mean, there are all sorts of people that I encounter personally and from a distance who I look at and I'm like, it's not as easy for me to see the goodness in you, for me to see the light in you. I despise the things that you stand for. I despise the way that you treat people. I mean, there are all kinds of people who do terrible things. And the very simple practice, the starting place, is to take 10 seconds each day and see the humanity in someone who is different from yourself, right? And you can start with the easy places, family members, friends, colleagues, coworkers. But once you get through that list and you need to find someone else, then you'll start seeing strangers, people who you've never noticed before, people who you wouldn't otherwise connect with. And what I found through this practice is that actually the strangeness starts to go away. And it's through this, you know, 10 seconds every day, finding someone. It doesn't have to be super cheesy. You don't have to lock eyes with them and stare stare at them. But just notice someone who you don't notice usually. So many of the assumptions that we make about one another are born out of ignorance, a closed offness in our culture. And I just have found that by opening ourselves up, we can help open up one another. And that's where the exchange really begins, and we can really start to see one another's humanity.
That was Simranjeet Singh speaking with NPR's Rachel Martin. This conversation is part of her new series called Enlighten Me, where Rachel explores what it takes to build a life of meaning. You can hear more right here, same time next Sunday.